Computer. Okay, now we'll share the screen. Okay. All right. So, welcome everyone. Thank you for coming. This is the final Shiur in the series from People to Nation. It's been an incredible time learning with you. I know we had a little bit of a break in terms of the Shiurim, so I'll definitely recap so we can get back into the swing of things. But it's really been a pleasure learning with you. The last seven. Shiurim, and this eighth one will be the final one. I kind of structured this as a capstone, both in terms of kind of taking the concepts that we talked about in the last few Shiurim and taking kind of applying it to a certain place in Tanakh, which happens to be this week's Parsha, as well as the second part will hopefully be just to kind of sum up. You know, we've examined the Avos and Matan Torah in a variety of angles, and each shiur was its own thing, its own self-contained topic, but it's always nice to kind of put all the pieces together. So I hope to do both of those over the course of this shiur. So this one really builds off of the last shiur. So I included the main part of the last shiur as the first source. This is an article from the Gush Virtual Base Medrash by Rav Yehuda Goldberg. It's called Bris Avos and Bris Sinai. And he describes the relationship between these two covenants. So Bris Avos is what we'd have been speaking about over the last few Shiurim. We explained it based off of Rav Dessler and Rav Tzadok HaKohen, that Bris Avos is something that never goes away. And what it means is that the Avos developed their midos and their character traits and were able to instill it into the Jewish cultural DNA that would get passed down from generation to generation, so much so that God said, I will personally intervene through history to make sure that your cultural connection to your Jewish heritage on a national level will never be abrogated. That's Bris Avos. And in the last year, we said that that is based off of one type of contract that existed in the Middle East during the biblical times, known as a land grant. A Babylonian land grant was something that the king would bestow on a vassal for demonstrations of loyalty. And it was and they would like put a rock or a stone as a border, saying that the king had given it to this family, and no matter what that family would do in subsequent years or generations, even if they would commit treason, it could never be taken away from them. And that parallels Bris Avos, that no matter what we do, God will personally make sure that we will never lose our connection to the Avos and to Judaism on a national level. The second is Bris Sinai. It's the covenant that we made at Har Sinai, what we spoke about in the first shiur, about what made us from a people of Bris Avos to a nation of Bris Sinai. It's the framework of a Jewish civilization. And that covenant is structured as a condition. While Bris Avos is just because of what our ancestors did, God had a plan, they bought into it. And as long as we buy into it, it can never be taken away. Bris Sinai is conditional. If we do good, then God rewards us. And if we don't do good, God punishes us. And that is parallel to the other type of treaty that existed during biblical times, just a standard political treaty, where the obligations were on the vassal towards the master. And so similarly, by Bris Sinai, the Jewish people committed to having a two-way relationship with Hashem, that if they would do good, God would do good to them, and the opposite is true as well. And so what Rav Yehuda Goldberg does in this article is that he describes the relationship between the two. Meaning you could say that, okay, we kind of graduated out of Bris Avos to Bris Sinai. And he says that's not the case. He said, rather, they complement each other. He says the foundations of, in the first box, he says the foundations of Bris Sinai are laws. And the foundations of Bris Avos are values. These are two separate agendas. They're two separate tracks. Bris Sinai kind of sets the bottom line of how to navigate certain interactions with each other, how to have a functional society. But if we go down to the second box, Bris Avos is something much more lofty. Bris Avos is the point behind it. It's the reason. It's the ceiling, so to speak, of the relationship. It's why we got into this. And he draws a, and then he says that these covenants complement each other. And the mashal that he gives is based off of, if we turn the page to that last box, he says the classic example in American history is the complementary role of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Now, again, this is an Israeli rabbi taking a position on constitutional law. I'm not saying that his analysis is correct. I'm not saying his analysis is the only one. This is just the example that he's giving, where he says that the Declaration of Independence outlines principles, the ideal values that the American nation is founded on, and that the Constitution says, okay, well, practically, how do we take those values and translate them into a society, into a civilization? So he says that's the relationship of Bris Avos and Bris Sinai. Bris Avos is the lofty, broad values that we bought into, that Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov bought into, that set the cultural tone for all eternity. But okay, fine. How do we translate that? How do we navigate that in the real world? That's what we have the Torah for. The Torah gives certain laws and boundaries and strictures, but there's a lifnei mishur hadin. The Torah is the baseline, but the values transcend the Torah and go back to the avos. That's the relationship that Rav Yehuda Goldberg describes. That's what we did last time. What I want to do this week is to show you two sections from this week's parsha that shows the interplay that I think he's describing between Bris Avos and not Bris Sinai, because we didn't get the Torah yet, but a nascent form of Bris Sinai or allusions to Bris Sinai or what it symbolizes. So let's take a look. Source number two is from the sort of the middle part of Parsha Shmos. And I highlighted the names of Hashem. And what I want you to focus on is twofold, is what names of Hashem there are and how they're used. And the second is the context that they're used in, meaning what's being talked about when a particular name of Hashem is being used. So in source number two, this is from Perek Beis. This talks about after Moshe ran away to Midian, he left the Jewish people to fend for themselves. So the king, the Paro, died. The Gemara has a machlokas as to whether it's literal that he died or he got saras. So there was something that happened, something that changed in the political world in Egypt, but nothing changed for the Jews. Or maybe it got worse, depending on how you understand the Gemara. Vayanchu b'nei Yisrael min ha'avoda. The Jewish people sighed from the work. Vayizuaku, and they cried out. Batal shavasam el ha'elokim min ha'avoda. And so their cries go up to Elohim, to God, from the work. And then in the next two psukim, it says that Elohim heard their cries. Elohim remembered his covenant with Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And God and Elohim saw the Jewish people. And Elohim, I'm sorry, it's supposed to be Elohim. Okay, so we have to put this in Shemos. I'm sorry. So it said, I really tried. I thought I got all of them. Vayeda Elohim. And once again, and Elohim knew. So up until now, this is talking about Elohim. Elohim sees what the Jewish people are doing, and what's the knee-jerk reaction? What's the knee-jerk reaction? I'm sorry? No, God, I'm sorry. I meant God's knee-jerk reaction. Brisavos, yeah. So immediately, Vayeda comes right after that. So the first thing is, Elohim remembers Bris Avos. So tefillah, crying out to Hashem, triggers Bris Avos. And then the next thing is Vayeda Elohim, and then Elohim internalizes it. Yada means to know. What? Well, so it says in Pasuk Chaf Daled, Vayishma Elohim es na'akasam. Elohim hears their cries. Vayizkar Elohim es briso es Avram Yitzchak es Yaakov. So that's the knee-jerk reaction. And then once that knee-jerk reaction takes place, then God looks. So first God hears, you know, it's like he's far away. See, he hears something and then he says, oh, I remember I have this covenant. Then, you know, the imagery is he gets closer, he sees what's going on, and then he internalizes it. So then what happens next? Next is Paragimel, source number three. So Moshe is acting as a shepherd and he comes to Har Elohim Chareva. He comes to Horev or Har Sinai, and he comes to Har Elohim. So then things begin to change. Vayera malach havayo, or yud ke vav ke a love. So now a malach of yud ke vav ke appears to him from the sneh. And then Moshe sees the sneh. And if we turn the page, so then we have an interesting thing. So we have Vayera Havaya. So Yud Kei Vav Kei sees that Moshe had turned. Vayikra Elav Elokim mitoch hasna, but Elokim talks to him. So Yud Kei Vav Kei is doing the seeing, but who's doing the talking? The Malach or Elokim is doing the talking. And he says, Moshe, Moshe, and he says, Hineini, he says, come over here, take off your shoes, it's holy ground. And then he introduces himself. If we look in Pasuk Vav, Vayomer, he says, Anochi Elokei Avicha, Elokei, again, I'm sorry, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. We have Elokim in relation to the Avos. So once again, we have Elokim talking to Moshe. Yudke Vavke did the seeing, but Elokim introduces himself as Elokim and says, I'm the Elokim of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And then we have an identity shift. In Pasuk Zion, Vayomer Havaya, Yud Kei Vav Kei Nasuk, now he does the talking. Ra'o Ra'isi Es Ani Ami, I've seen the affliction of my people, and I've seen their cry, and I've heard their cries. Ki Yadati Es Machovav, because I know their pains.
Very good. Okay, Elokim is me as I did.
Exactly, right. So I was gonna say it later. We could say it now. So this is names mean things. Names are ways that we express who we are, how other people relate to us. So God has different names. It doesn't mean he has different personalities, but there are different ways that he interacts with creation. So the way that Chazal explain it on the simplest level, Elokim connotes din, or judgment, or strictness, and Yud Kei Vav Kei connotes rachamim, and not only rachamim, it's described as Hashem's essence. So, yeah, the logical thing to do would be to say, okay, let's look at the context. Whenever Midas HaRachamim is being invoked, whenever God's mercy is being evoked, we should see Yud Kei Vav Kei. And whenever judgment is being evoked, it should be Elokim. So this makes sense. This works very well over here in Pasuk Zion, right? Because God's saying, look, I heard, I felt bad, I saw, I internalized. That makes sense. That's Rachamim. But if we go back, God is describing a certain event. He's describing the phenomenon of Perek Beis. And in Perek Beis, it says, Vayishma Elokim es Nakasam, Vayizkar Elokim es Priso, Vayar Elokim es Bnei Yisrael, Vayeda Elokim. So God's describing an event that took place. But when the event took place, it was Elokim. Now, when he's talking about it to the Moshe, now he changes his identity. Now the description is Yudke Vavke. Now the Rachamim is being inserted. So it's very interesting. At the time that it took place, we're in Elokim world. Now, when he's describing what happened, now he uses Yud Kei Vav Kei. But there's also another difference between what happened and between what Hashem described. There's another difference. What's missing here that happened in Perek Beis? When God describes what happens, there's something else that's missing. He doesn't mention Bris Avos. He introduces himself. He says, "I'm Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov." But then in Pasuk Zion, it starts talking about what's actually happening, and he says, "I heard their cries. I saw. I internalized." There's one thing that's missing, which is Hashem remembering Bris Avos. It's not mentioned here. And then if you continue, look in Pasuk 8, it doesn't mention it either. Now then it says, I'm gonna descend, I'm gonna take them out, I'm gonna bring them to Israel. And then if we go to Pasuk Tes, he says it again. I see all the bad stuff. And so again, he's describing what happened before and no mention of the avos. So there's yeah.
Maybe it's because that it's even the two Yeshivas that didn't, they deserve to be redeemed. You know, the Midas HaRachamim come later, with all the scar that they get afterwards. But even on this level, it's gotten to the point where by Midas HaRachamim, it's come the time for Tshuva.
So that's very interesting. So you're touching on a much bigger question, which is, why did the Jewish people merit to go out of Egypt? Where did they merit to go out of Egypt? That's a very big question. Did they deserve it? If they deserved it, why did they deserve it? So, right, yeah. As, yeah, and so there's a famous medrash. We're not exactly sure where the medrash is. A lot of achronim talk about it, and the medrash doesn't seem to exist, but everybody talks about it. It's a big question. It's not the only medrash like that, but it's a famous medrash that says that when the Jewish people wanted to cross the Yam Suf, the angels said they're no different than the Egyptians. They're so culturally assimilated; they both worship idols. And it wasn't going to happen until the Yam Suf saw the Aron of Yosef. And once it saw the Aron of Yosef, just like Yosef went against his nature with Potiphar's wife, so too the Yam Suf went against its nature and split for the Jewish people. So it seems like that they didn't deserve it, and we're going back to some previous ancestry. So what you're saying is, well, maybe there's different tracks here. Maybe on one level we need Bris Avos. But maybe even according to Midas HaDin, they needed to go out now. Maybe they didn't deserve it, but maybe they withstood enough punishment. Maybe they had enough, you know, affliction. So yeah, it's a good point. We'll develop it further. Yes.
Wasn't it discussed that they were leaning toward, or they were going down so low that if they had finally reached the lowest, they wouldn't have been there?
Yeah, so that's, that again is another source of saying that the Jewish people didn't really deserve to go out, and God had to sort of stage an intervention in order to preserve Bris Avos. That if he doesn't intervene now, then the Jewish people will be so disconnected from their heritage, and so Bris Avos compelled God to intervene and take them out prematurely. Yeah, Jay, sorry.
I want to point out that there is a mention in the Pastor Bob. And by Yasser Moshe becomes overwhelmed. So there is, it's not Bris Avos, but maybe it's into that.
Well, so you could say that God's introduction is an allusion to Bris Avos. What I see though is him essentially introducing himself as Elohim of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. But now I'm not working on that. Now I'm going into Yud Kei Vav Kei Mo to take you out. So I think the imagery is, hi, let me introduce myself. I'm Elohim of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. But how am I going to act with you once we've been introduced in a totally different way, a totally different relationship?
Okay, I'm not disputing, I'm not arguing, but Moshe is, and I use the word overwhelmed, because if I ask him, Moshe, why? Then he gets like frightened, or what? Because now I recognize where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can connect. Until now, conversation. Now, whoa, this is really it.
Yeah. So We'll try to, again, there's so much to do. We'll try to touch on Moshe's perspective as well. I mean, because right now I've only been talking about God's perspective. There's also, you know, there's two people in this conversation. You can analyze this entire parak from Hashem's perspective, and then you can also analyze it from Moshe's perspective. I personally think there's two different conversations going on. But I agree. Moshe, the way Moshe knows who Hashem is through his heritage, and then he gets freaked out. And that's how he begins to connect the dots. And if you see, it continues. Look now, you know, after in Pasuk Yud, Hashem says, okay, I'm sending you to Paro. If you go to Pasuk Yud Aleph, look what we go back to now. Vayomer Moshe El Helokim. So Moshe is relating to God, even though God said, I'm working in Yud Kei Vav Kei mode, Moshe reverts back to the Elohim that introduced himself to him, the Elohim of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And what does Moshe say? Me anochi, who am I? Who can I? Who can go to? Who am I that can go to Paro? And then he says, "V'chi otzi es b'nei Yisrael mi Mitzrayim." Can I take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim? So Rashi on that says Moshe was actually saying lashon hara about the Jewish people. Moshe was actually saying, "Who am I to take them out? I'm nothing." But also, can I even take the Jewish people out? Meaning, let's go even beyond my own personal worth. Do the Jewish people merit going out? That's very similar to the question that we looked at last year when Avraham asked, "Bama Eda, how do I know that my kids are going to get Eretz Yisrael if maybe they don't deserve it?" And that's what triggered the whole Bris Avos, Bris Bein Avisarim. So Moshe is relating to the Elohim of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and his argument is saying that Bris Avos ain't going to work here. He's trying to go back to Bris Avos, and he's saying, even with that, it can't work. It's not working. But he missed the point. Because Hashem wasn't talking in Bris Avos land. He was talking in Yud Kei Vav Kei world. Well, let's keep going. And again, Moshe continues. If you turn the page, Moshe continues. Vayomer Moshe El Elokim. And he again continues to say bad things about the Jewish people. He says, you know, the Elohim of your fathers came to me, Elokei Avoseichem, and they're going to say, what's your name? And so again, we have this whole name thing. And so now Hashem just responds, Vayomer Elokim. Okay, so Hashem says, okay, you're talking in Bris Avos world, let's talk in Bris Avos world. Ekya Asher Ekya, I will be what I will be. Yeah, you just hear an old Jewish man say, I will be what I will be. I don't know if you ever saw Ocean's 11. I think it was Carl Reiner, who's playing this old Russian guy. They will be here. You know, that's exactly what God's saying. I will be what I will be. What does that mean? So the way Rashi explains it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be, you know, is the Tsar of the Shekhinah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will share the pain of the Jewish people in exile. So that's, again, Bris Avos. Hashem says, I'm going to go into exile with you and I'll take you out. So Hashem is saying that, you know, I will be what I will be. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu, don't worry about the Bris Avos stuff. You know, Elohim is talking, I got this part covered. And then let's look at Pasuk Tesva. This is where it begins to change again. In Pasuk Tesva, Vayomer od Elohim el Moshe. So again, Elohim. Kosamar b'nei Yisrael. Okay, you want to know what you're supposed to say to the Jewish people? Yud kei vav kei Elokei Avoseichem. Now we have both. We have a synthesis of what God is doing and the way God introduced himself, the historical Bris Avos God. There's a union between the two. Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, Shelachani Aleichem. Ze shmi le'olam v'ze zichri le'dor dor. You want to know how I would be remembered eternally? You want to know the secret to redemption? It's both. It's Yud Kei Vav Kei and it's Elokei Avoseichem. It's the union between the two of them. And then he says it again. He says, go gather. Well, excuse me. Go gather the elders of the Jewish people and say to them, Yud Kei Vav Kei Elokei Avoseichem Nira Eli. Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. And so again, we have the union between the two. We have Din and Rachamim. We have Bris Avos and the present. We have the Yud Kei Vav Kei is always used in this context to describe Hashem's relationship with the Jewish people as they are now. When God's saying, you want to know why I took the Jews?
It's the first time he tells Moshe.
I'm sorry? Well, this is the first time he tells Moshe how to introduce himself to the Jews. I'm sorry? You mean Yud Kei Vav Kei, you're saying? Yes. This is the first time he says Yud Kei Vav Kei. Up until now, you had what Jay said. The introduction of Moshe to God is Elohim. is Bris Avos. That's the introduction. So you're saying that now Hashem's saying, like, okay, Moshe, like, you've been working in the wrong mode because you didn't understand. Now I'm reintroducing myself to you. Okay, that's very interesting. I didn't think of it that way, but I agree. It could also be that he's trying to reintroduce himself to Moshe, saying, you got the wrong picture. This is the real full me, and share this full, complete picture with the Jewish people. Okay, yeah, I think that can work. Before we put this all together, there's one more section at the end of this week's parsha and the beginning of next week's parsha, Perek Vav. So this is after Moshe goes to Paro to demand the Jewish people's freedom. It fails spectacularly. Paro makes it worse. And so Hashem tries to kind of console, you know, Moshe complains to God, and then Hashem responds. He says, Vayomer Yudke Vavke. Again, we're talking about now. What's going to happen now? Ata tira asher asa liparo. Now you're going to see what I'm going to do. But then we go back. We revert back to Elohim. Why? Why does Va'era open up with Elohim? Because we go back to the Avos. Va'era el Avram Yitzchak v'Yakov b'kel shakai u'shmi yudke vavke lo nadati lahem. The Avos always operated in Elohim. What does that mean? Rashi says, Nishbati, Nishbati, I swore, I pledged to give, and they never saw my promises fulfilled. What are we talking about? We're talking about faith. We're talking about buying into something. When you're talking about buying into something, that's judgment. It's almost counterintuitive. We usually associate judgment with stuff that we're dispensing now. You know, if we pass a sentence, you know, are you chayiv? Are you potter? Are you right? Are you wrong? But judgment from God's sense, we touched on this a little bit in the Elul Nechemya Shiurim. Judgment might be based on the past, but it's really forward focused. Judgment is saying, what do you deserve? How do you deserve to be treated going forward? Sometimes that's based on the past. Sometimes that's based on the future. When it comes to human beings, it has to be purely based on the past. But Rosh Hashanah is on the future. When we say people are judged how much rain they're going to get, it doesn't necessarily mean it has to do based on how we were the year before. Judgment is not saying, okay, let's look at your track record and see what you deserve. Judgment is based on who you are. And there are different ways we can evaluate who you are, past, present, and future. What is befitting for you? But it doesn't have to mean the past. That's why when God created the world, it was Elohim. Nothing happened beforehand. And it was only later that God married Rachamim into it, just like he did over here. Just like there were 10, you know, statements that were used to create the world, and it was first judgment and then mercy, so too over here, when we're creating the Jewish people, and we're reasserting God's dominance through the Makos and through the Torah, we first have Elohim as the springboard of the Avos, and we have to marry that with Yudke Vavke, with the way Hashem is relating to the Jewish people right now. That's how the Sfas Emes describes it. But what I want to bring out over here is that we see that the Avos always related to God as Elohim, as to judgment. They're building a certain cultural legacy, and that requires strict judgment. Are you one of the people that have such a faith in God, that have perfected your essence to be a Merkava, to be a chariot, completely devoted to God, so much so that all the values that you have will get passed down to your children and children and children going down tens and hundreds of generations? We need strict judgment for that. That's Elohim. But now, when the Jewish people are in Egypt and they cry out, we're working with a totally different framework. We're not focusing on the past. We're focusing on the present right now, which in a certain sense is conditional, meaning you have to cry out to God. But the conditionality also has a certain, in Hebrew, the term is tzadhakal, a certain leniency element to it, which is maybe you don't deserve it. Maybe you are an Oved Avodah Zarah. Maybe you are naked from mitzvos, as the Haggadah says. Maybe you don't deserve to leave. But because you cried out, and you're coming from the Avos, then it works. When the Jewish people cry out, Hashem doesn't say, oh, they deserve to go out. No. When Hashem hears their cries, Hashem says, wait a second. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Elohim. But then once he hears the cries, once he internalizes it, now when he begins to describe it to Moshe of what he's going to do, he's not doing anything because of the Avos. He's doing it because of Yudke Vavke, because of his rachamim, based on the Jewish people crying right now. It's based on our actions. God took us out because we cry. Why did he hear our cries? Because of the Avos. But why did he take us out? Not because of the Avos. He took us out because we cried out, because we were in pain, because of the Tzar Ashkina, because of Ekya Asher Ekya. So that's the relationship. And I think this parallels the relationship of Bris Avos and Bris Ina. Now, again, they didn't have the Torah, but they needed to get mitzvahs to go out. They needed Bris Mila. They needed Karban Pesach. And they needed to do something. There was a conditionality, not just being ancestors of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Right? So they didn't change their language. They didn't change their clothing. They didn't change their names. In that merit, they may have merited to go out, but that's not what triggered the redemption. Right? It didn't say that, oh, God saw them, that they were dressed differently. They never changed their dress. And the galus still happened. That was just the springboard. Why did they go out? Because they cried. Just because you cry doesn't mean you deserve it. But why did God take us out? Is because of our actions. Because we cried. The reason why he listened, the reason why our crying had any impact is because of Bris Avos. And God saw, wow, you know, these people that are crying out, they're descendants of such special people. They have all of those qualities within them. If I give them the Torah, it'll open up. It'll open them up. And that's why Hashem said to Moshe's response. If you go back to the previous page, to Pasuk Yud Beis, it says, Vayomer, ki eke imach, I will be with you. Bottom of page 3. Vizelecha ha'os, ki anochi shelachticha, bahotziacha es ha'ami mitzrayim. You want to know why they'll deserve it? Ta'avdunas elokim al har hazeh. They'll serve the God of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov on this mountain. So once again, we have that link of Bris Avos, but Bris Avos takes us to something else. It takes us to Har Sinai. And Moshe and Hashem is responding. You want to know why they deserve to go out? Not because of anything they did up until now. But I'm listening to them because they cried out. The reason why I'm taking them out is because they cried out. The reason why I heard their cries is because of the Avos. And the reason why they deserve to go out is not because of anything right now. It's because of the future of Bris Sinai, of what they will do. Yeah.
There's another key here with your son. The word call. Hashem tells Avram, call. Yes, it is a noun. Hashem Etzem, call. And here too it says, call. Here's the clue. Call that I mentioned to Avram. Here it is. Call. Shall you say, Bnei Israel?
Ah, interesting.
The key is right here.
So can you clarify what's the significance of that?
The key, this is my promise to Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov. The promise that I made to Avram is the word call.
Okay.
That was the key.
So you're saying that that's another reference to. Okay. That's okay. I never put together that. That's very interesting. Okay, so you're saying that in addition to just the standard zechira, there's a particular pasuk or a particular clause that he's referring to.
The code name is
called. Okay. Very nice. That's very nice. Okay. So he's actually, you know, pointing to that pasuk in Precious of why he's choosing to listen now. Ad ko, exactly. Wow. Okay. Very nice. Okay. Yeah. So that's at the beginning of Parshas Matos, the Medrash says that Nevi'im prophesized using the word Ko, as opposed to Moshe Rabbeinu, who used the word Zeh. Right. Now, Moshe sometimes used ko, but not often. When he was talking, when he was teaching Torah, he used the word zeh. And so it could be like what you're saying, that we have this, we have the ko of the Nevi'im, of Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov. Whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to the Jewish people outside of Bris Sinai, it was always with ko. And that is what is really the force behind all of it. That's very nice. I like that. Okay. And so what I think this is a very interesting, I think there's a lot more to do here. I think this really describes, though, a very nascent form of the interplay between Bris Avos and Bris Sinai, where Bris Avos is the catalyst for Hashem maintaining his relationship with the Jewish people or renewing his relationship with the Jewish people. But then what actually makes the relationship go further and go forward is Yudke Vavke, is Rachamim, but that Rachamim is contingent on the Jewish people doing something. Here it was crying out, and also what they will do in the future of accepting the Torah. And so the way Hashem says, you want to know Zeshmi Leolam Zezichri Lador Dor, you want to know what the eternal description of me will be for all future redemptions, the union between the two, that relationship between Bris Avos and Bris Sinai. So on a much more applied sense, if you turn to page 5, this is an idea, or you can see a certain spin on this idea from the Sefer Keser Shem Tov. So the Sefer Keser Shem Tov, which I'm quoting here, is a collection of teachings by the Baal Shem Tov. The picture on your right is not the Baal Shem Tov. It's not. If you Google, what? No, we do not. If you Google Baal Shem Tov, this is the picture you will get. It is not the Baal Shem Tov. It is a painting by, I think, an American painter of the Baal Shem of London. The Baal Shem of London is a totally different person. People just got mixed up, and so they put in the history books, Baal Shem, Baal Shem. Oh, this must be the Baal Shem Tov. It's not the Baal Shem Tov. It's a painting of the Baal Shem of London. The Baal Shem of London was a very interesting person. He came from the mainland, moved to London. He was a Kabbalist. He was a pietist. Very eccentric person, and he developed a following of very wealthy Jewish and non-Jewish politicians and aristocrats. You know, nowadays we have a lot of wealthy and powerful people connected with certain mikubalim, so nothing changes. That's what they had back then, too. There are debates as to whether this guy was legitimate or not. A Baal Shem, you know, there were a lot of Baal Shems. Baal Shems were essentially the equivalent of the Jewish medicine man in Europe. And instead of working with herbs, they would use cameos. They would use amulets or names of Hashem. That's what it means, Baal Shem, master of the name. So they would use names of Hashem, like what we've been learning about, to help people out. So some of them were legitimate. Some of them were charlatans. There's a lot of stories about certain villages chasing out Baal Shems. They wouldn't take them. And certain legitimate ones were also chased out. So this guy was the Baal Shem of London. And so there are debates about whether this guy was a charlatan or not. He was definitely an eccentric person. He definitely portrayed himself as a pietistic person. He was very wealthy, but he also gave a lot of tzedakah. Like, he did a lot of good stuff. And for all intents and purposes, he was a big tzaddik. Nobody really knows if he was a Talmud Chacham or not. Nobody really knows how much he actually knew. The consensus is that he was a genuine person who may have had some, altered mental states at some point. But we honestly don't know much about him. We just know him as a figure because, you know, Western Europe got to know him very well. But anyway, this is, it was in the, I think it was in the late 1700s, early 1800s, again, around the time of the Baal Shem Tov as well. Let me just Google it if you don't. I can just do it right now, honestly, if you give me 1 second. Baal Shem London, 1708 to 1782. Okay. Yeah, so again, a contemporary of the Baal Shem Tov, maybe a drop older, but around the same time. His name was Chaim Shmuel Yaakov Falk. Anyway. Uh-huh. Anyway, so the Baal Shem Tov, so he didn't really publish any Sfarim. He published a little bit of, like, a couple of lines of stuff, a little pamphlet here and there, but almost nothing. The main Torah that we have from him are from his students. So one of the Svarim that was published of a collection of statements that he said is the Sefer Keser Shem Tov. There's multiple editions. This edition is published by Chabad. It's probably the most, I would say, the most critically and academically researched. The others were just, you know, passed down. I think this one was the most vetted one. It's been edited a couple of times. I think it's considered the most authoritative. So the Baal Shem Tov, in Keser Shem Tov, he quotes an idea from the Panim Meiros, who lived before the Baal Shem Tov, and the Baal Shem Tov expands on this idea. And he says there are two ways to approach emunah, two approaches to a belief in God. He says some people believe in God because of a tradition that they received from their ancestors. You know, what you got from your parents, from your teachers, from your friends, from your community. And the other is based on your own personal discovery. And he says there are strengths and weaknesses, there are pros and cons to each of them. Right? So a personal connection with God is fresh, it's new, it's energizing, it's creative. But the downside is that, let's say you run into some problems. Let's say you're not feeling it. Let's say you run into an issue. So it all goes up in smoke. The flip side, if it's based on a tradition, you can never take away that tradition that you get. You can just close your eyes to it. You know, that's where Bris Avos comes in. But you can't uproot tradition that was passed on to you from when you were a child or from when you first learned it from somebody else. But the negative of that is that it's stale. It's dry. You can't do anything with it. But it's immovable because it's been fossilized, so to speak. No matter what you do, it won't go away. And so what the Baal Shem Tov says is that we need to have both. You need to have both. You can't reinvent the wheel. You need to have a tradition that's been passed down from you, that's immovable, that no matter what happens in your life, it will not be shaken. It will not be moved. But that's just the foundation. That's just where it starts. That's just to keep you in line. That's the Bris Avos. But that's the Elohim. But the Yud Kei Vav Kei, the Rachamim of where I'm holding God's relationship with me. Maybe I am an Oved Avodah Zarah, just like the Mitzrim. Maybe I'm not, but I'm crying out. I have a relationship to God. So that's what you need to build off of. That's the Torah. That's my own personal Avodas Hashem, my Torah and Mitzvot, not my parents' Torah and Mitzvot. And so the Baal Shem Tov says, if you go to the, in the English part, in the underlined part, he says, as such, we must employ and combine both approaches. And he says, this is what's alluded to when we say Shemona Esrei. He says, Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu. The first is our God. First and foremost, our religion needs to be personalized. It needs to be based on what we do, our crying out to Hashem, our commitment to Torah mitzvot. But then what does it rest on? It rests on a bedrock of our ancestral legacy. In the Hebrew, v'lazeh anu omrim Elokeinu. Mitzad chakiroseinu, based on our own investigations. Ve'lokei avoseinu mitzad kabbalaseinu, and from our forefathers, based on our acceptance. He says v'kach klasav b'panim me'iros, and that's what he says of the panim me'iros. And he goes further and says Yitzchak and Yaakov did the same thing. They didn't just rest on what Avraham did. They forged their own path. They took what Avraham gave them and they did their own thing with it. And so once again, I think this shows how Hashem introduced himself to Bnei Yisrael and how he reintroduced himself to Moshe. I am Yud Kei Vav Kei, Elokei Avoseichem. I am both. You need both to go out. Why am I, you know, what caused me to listen to you? It's Elokei Avoseinu. But why am I actually listening to you? Because of you, because of Yud Kei Vav Kei, because of what you're doing. Maybe you deserve it, maybe you don't, but it's what you're doing. And so that's where, you know, this is, I think, the capstone to what we've been talking about. And here I'll try to sum up what we've been doing the last 8 shiurim. So we've been learning about the Avos. And what we established is twofold. The first, in the first shiur from Rav Shlomo Fischer, from the Rogatchover, from Rav Soloveitchik, that the Jewish people only became a nation when they got the Torah. Of Bris Sinai. Because Bris Sinai is not just religious rules. It's to create a civilization. It's Yud Kei Vav Kei. It's what I'm doing now. It's me crying out. It's everything, every little thing that I'm doing, or like the way Rav Lichtenstein or the Lubavitcher Rebbe explained the Ramban. It's a two-way street. It's conditional. God says this and I do that, and then God responds. There's a give and a take. There's a constant give and a take of God and me, of a two-way street. But then the question is then, so if we really only became a nation, well, what did we need the Avos for? What were the Avos? What did they contribute to us? And so to that, we have the way Rav Aaron Cutler and the first Lubavitcher Rebbe described the Avos, is that they were unique. Even if they may have been fallible, even if they may have been prone to error from time to time, they were unique in the sense that they were totally devoted to God. They had no ulterior motive. They had no ulterior agenda. It was solely to forward God's plan. And because that was so central to who they are, they created that cultural legacy, like we spoke about with the family feuds. They created that cultural legacy of creating a spiritual, cultural DNA of what it means to be Jewish. That's what Rav Chaim Soloveitchik described as the mehus of a Jew. They were be'etzem Jewish, even if they weren't halachically Jewish. They hadn't completed their conversion yet that happened by Bris Sinai. But Bris Avos is a product of being in essence Jewish. That something, that there are certain character traits, spiritual midos, that are so central to who we are that no matter what the circumstances will be, no matter where we are, no matter what happens, it is so central a part of who we are that that will never change. And because of that cultural reservoir and all we have going for us, God made a covenant with the Avos and said that the Avos had faith in me and they wanted to be part of my plan and their kids wanted to be part of my plan. Esav didn't, but Yaakov wanted to, and the Jewish people in Egypt, they didn't change their clothing. They didn't change their name. They didn't change their language. There's actually an article that was just published about how the Jewish people actually may have taken Egyptian and made a Jewish version of it, just like Yiddish or Ladino. Very interesting article. I don't think the rest of the world has agreed to it yet, but it's an interesting article. I just saw it this week. But anyway, so the Jewish people in Egypt said, we're going to continue this plan. And so God said, I'm making a covenant with you that no matter what happens, because you have all that going for you, I will personally intervene to make sure that that cultural legacy never goes away. But what ultimately are we supposed to do? We're supposed to marry those two things. We're supposed to marry the cultural legacy that we have with our two-way relationship with God that we ourselves make, because they both have different strengths. The personalized connection, the two-way street with God, enables it to be both personal me, creative, new, fresh, passionate with God, and it also enables me to bring God down into this world. God, when God hears our cries, he remembers the Avos. What actually causes him to do stuff in this world, to come down, to descend into Egypt, to descend into this physical world? It's what we do now. It's the two-way relationship. It's serving God at Har Sinai. It's Bris Sinai. That's what causes God to make this world his home. But on the other hand, that can fall away. That's prone to risk. So what keeps us anchored is that cultural legacy that the Avos passed down to us. All of the midos of Rachmanim, Baishanim, Gomle Chasadim, being kind, being modest, all of that, being merciful, all of that is what makes us who we are. And then the question is, well, what do we do with who we are? And that's what Sefer Shmos is all about. Sefer Shmos is saying, okay, the Avos gave us all of this, but now what do we do with it? So thank you all for learning with me these past 8 weeks. It's been wonderful. And we should be Zocha to have both, to have what the Avos gave us and then to take it and make it our own. Have a wonderful night.